Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
And welcome to Adventures in History. I'm Alana Quila with Providence Seaside Hospital, here today with Mac Burns with the Clatsop County Historical Society, a.k.a. the home of Santa's mailbox.
You know, we had so many letters to Santa that we passed along, and you've got to come in now. Pick it up sometime before we're closed on Christmas Eve, so you got to come in.
Pick them up. It was a great 24th. Holiday event. Very COVID safe. Makes my heart warm.
And who sponsored that?
Providence Seaside Hospital.
Those guys.
Yes.
And our good friends, Kent and LJ Isom, all the way from Idaho. They've sponsored Santa since the very beginning.
We love it. They have a Christmas spirit, don't they?
They do. They actually, they do. The first year we did this event, LJ showed up and she had gone to like Purple Cow Toys and bought like a couple of $100 worth of some pretty good toys. I mean, there's like wooden stick horses and things like that. And she just kind of walked around and saw kids that seemed like they were really behaving well and just say, here, Santa told me to give this to you. I mean, it was really nice.
Yeah, and they're not even here and still.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they love this event.
Christmas spirit.
So yeah, you got to, if you left a letter for Santa, we passed it along and then Santa has delivered stockings that we have for each writer that wrote a letter.
I love it.
So just come on in and pick it up.
Well, great. We have a very, very special guest here today.
This could be a two-parter.
I'm sure it could be.
We might need a full hour for really to explore with Laura in here.
I don't want to bore everybody.
Do you recognize that voice, anyone? Any other hints? Hints about who is in our studio today?
You're involved in...
I'm involved a long time in the Scandinavian Festival.
And weren't you... didn't you work for the Astoria Warrenton School District? Or Astoria Warrenton,
I worked, yes. I was 31 years, almost 32 years at the Astoria School District.
And you were on the city council?
I spent 12 years on the city council.
Oh, my goodness. And married to the lovely woman, Corleen. We adore yes. her.
The best for last.
I know.
She keeps me squared away.
We love that. We do. If you haven't guessed it yet, we do have Lauren Matthews here today. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. It's good to have you here.
Well, thank you. Yeah. It's a real privilege to be here.
Well, I don't know about privilege, but we're glad you're here.
Yes, we are.
It's a privilege for us. Okay, so because there's going to be so much stuff, we should get right to the big history highlights.
Let's do it.
So let's see. On this day, 1812,
okay.
Grimm's Fairy Tales, or as it was originally called, Children's and Household Tales, by Jacob and Wilhelm Grimm. Is first published.
Have you ever watched any of the Grimm?
You know, of course I watched a little bit of it because it was filmed in
Portland,
in Oregon.
Right, yeah.
So officially it falls under the Oregon Film Museum purview. We actually have some props from it.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of fun.
There's like a lava monster. We have his arm.
Wow.
It's pretty cool.
Okay.
I was going to say, I'm assuming you have not read these to your little ones.
Not at all.
Because they're a little grim.
They are.
All right, 1820, Missouri imposes a $1 bachelor tax on unmarried men aged 21 to 50. If you're not married, you owe a dollar.
That's great. Finally, men being taxed for something.
I didn't dive down to see the rationale. I'm assuming it was to make people get married or to, you know, if you're...
They caused more problems.
They caused more problems. Move along.
Right. Contributing more to the police and...
A dollar in 1820. That's actually a pretty good amount, too. All right. 1957. Thank you. Thank you very much. Elvis is drafted.
Oh.
Did you ever see the Bye Bye Birdie?
Yes,
the play Bye Bye Birdie based on that?
Bye Bye Birdie. Yeah. Yes. Great.
Did we just get you to sing?
Yes. Wow. Not very well.
All right. 1860. South Carolina secedes from the Union. Bad South Carolina, bad. And then, of course, the Civil War is going to begin. That was almost my history highlight of the day, because that was a big one.
Yes.
But we'll keep moving here. 1880, New York's Broadway is lit by electricity. And, of course, it becomes known as the Great White Way.
Oh, okay.
1880. It always makes me laugh. In the Flavelle House, visitors will, and the house was built in 1885, 86, and they'll ask about electricity. And we say added initially electric lights. They added it a few years later. But I always say, but Astoria actually had some city lights electrified Christmas Eve 1885. And it's amazing how many people think I'm lying or don't know what I'm talking about. They're like, that early electricity? And I wish I'd like had this at my fingertips of Broadway 1880. Yes, electricity's around. Oh. It just seems like it's too early for a lot of people. All right, 1946, It's a Wonderful Life premieres.
Oh, that's great.
Favorite Christmas movie, yes or no?
No.
Favorite Christmas movie, yes or no?
I would say my favorite, no.
Okay, see, yeah, mine neither. It makes the top 10.
I don't know.
Wow, doesn't make your top 10.
I don't know.
I was giving you a chance. You could pontificate.
No.
Okay. 1989, the U.S. invades Panama. I love their canal. Okay, but our history highlight of the day, and they're not always good things. They're things I think had the most impact, right. And that doesn't necessarily mean good. 1836, Andrew Jackson submits Indian Treaty to Congress. And, of course, he presents to Congress a treaty negotiated with the, and I'm not going to pronounce all these names correctly, the Iowa, the Sac, the Sioux, the Fox, the Odoi, and the Omaha tribes in the Missouri Territory, and basically sends them away from their ancestral homes. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Not a very nice thing that that Andrew Jackson and Congress did to the Native Americans.
And certainly still felt impact today.
In a big way.
Yep.
1836.
Okay. Great.
Okay, but thank you. Did you have any better than mine?
I didn't. No, I was disappointed. There was nothing.
Well, you knew we were going to have a full slate today.
I did, yes. I'm so glad to have Lauren here. I've known Lauren for a long time, and yes. I adore his family too, not just his wife, but your daughter and grandchildren. So it's nice to have you here today.
Well, thank you. I appreciate all that.
We want to hear your story.
Yeah. So were you? You weren't born here, were you?
No, I'm actually a Kansas boy. I was born into a pretty large family in Kansas, 10 of us. Mm-hmm. And wow. So I came out here. Spent the last 2 years of my 4-year Coast Guard duties here in Astoria on the ship the Acona. And so when I got out, I did not want to go back to the flatlands of Kansas. I stayed here and met up with a local girl and got married to her, and the rest is...
Now, yeah. Were you dating her when you made the decision to stay here, or were you a single guy that just said, hey, I want to stay in Astoria?
Oh, I was dating her.
Okay.
Yes. But we dated for 4 years. Okay. So it was a while.
That's great.
And I have to ask, where in Kansas?
Town of Newton, Kansas.
Newton, Kansas.
Yes.
Okay.
Just north of Wichita.
Yeah, I am familiar. I went to school in Wichita.
Oh, did you? Okay. Well, then
I could see why you left.
Yes.
No. I like Kansas. Kansas is fine, and Wichita is fine too. before we get angry letters, but very flat. Yes.
It is flat. No doubt about that, and a lot different life out here. You know, a lot of different things out here.
And not much need for the Coast Guard.
No, not up on the Missouri River is about as close as you get to Coast Guard in where I was raised.
And so tell us about how you got involved in Scandinavian history.
Well, kind of interesting because Corlin's family, on her dad's side, her grandparents on her dad's side both came from Norway. And her mother's side... they came from Ireland and Germany. So, but the Scandinavian side kind of took over. And when we had our daughter, Tara, she was just small when Cordain's uncle was very involved with the very first festivals to come here and was involved with the Sons of Norway as well as Cordain's dad. And so about the second year of it, he said, well, you should come down and bring Tara down, we'll dress her up, we're going to have a little parade through town. And so went down and got involved with that, kind of knew what it was about. And about a year later, Ellis Simonson, who was one of the originators back when, and she had an advertisement in the paper that she was looking for somebody to help out with the festival. And we thought, well, it's kind of a neat deal. I went down there and said, well, would somebody like to do the parade? I thought, you know, I always enjoyed parades. Maybe I'll raise my hand, I'll chair a parade. So I got a chair, and partway through the year, her husband transferred. He was with here locally, and he went with a Job Corps down the coast. And so she said, she called me up one day and said, "You're now chairman." I said, "Oh, great. I know nothing about it, but I'm chairman."
They tricked you. They tricked you into
doing
it.
Yes, they did. So and that's been over 50 years ago.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. And how many, I mean, you've chaired so many other events as well. But really that, I mean, your impact on the Scandinavian Festival is huge.
I mean, you've been with it a long time.
Yeah. I mean, tell us what that means, though, to your family, to your daughter, to your wife. Not just your involvement, but how the whole program's even evolved over the years.
Yeah, we've seen it evolve. You know, the granddaughters have always been involved. They were both involved in our our son was not too involved. You know, it's hard to get boys involved. They have other things they prefer to do. So, and I understand that. But anyway, they have been around, because even one of the oldest grandson of the two we have is he was the ring bearer.
The flag bearer.
Kind of the flag, kind of on the court as the the one male that gets on the court there. So anyway, he did that. But anyway, they've always been involved. And as they got older, daughter Tara, she was Miss Norway 1 year in the 80s. And then both of her daughters were involved, were Miss Norway a few years ago, and both of them ended up being Miss Scandinavia crowned. So a lot of involvement.
50 years. How has the festival changed? If I visit it not this past year. If I visited a year ago, how was it different, my experience, than what visitors experienced 50 years ago to it?
Well, 50 years ago, it was actually started, as you've probably seen in history, by a Girl Scout group. And they actually started a festival to raise some funds for them to take some trips. They actually wanted to go on a cruise, on a ship and perform on a ship. And so they started, and the very first one was down at the old fairgrounds down here where the pool is now. Mm-hmm. And so that was where they started, and it was only a one-day festival. And their beer garden was held in a tent outside. And when I got involved, they were still at the old 4-H fairgrounds for 1 year. Then still one day, and we went to from there to the armory next door. And we were there for a few years, still a one-day festival. And then as we moved along and went out to the high school, then we started moving into somewhere along there as we switched from one to the other. We went to a three-day festival. And we've been a three-day festival ever since. We were in high school for a good number of years. And then 2002, I think, we switched out to the fairgrounds. So.
I liked it when it was at the high school. I remember going back when I was in high school and younger. That was a neat venue.
It was. It was a good venue, and we liked it because we had the auditorium there for entertainment. When we had to leave the high school, because that's when they passed the bond issue, and they needed us to be out of there for a year. And so when we moved over to the fairgrounds, we were actually able to accommodate a larger crowd. We grew quite a bit when we went out to the fairground, but the problem there was we did not have a nice auditorium where we could have entertainment, so we had to kind of make do out at the fairgrounds. Mm-hmm. But it's worked fine for us. And some people always wanted to go back to the high school, and we said if we go back there, we had two things. One, the school district decided that even if we held a beer garden outside of the building, we could not have a beer garden on the grounds at all. And the other thing that was probably more so, that they just couldn't accommodate the amount of electricity and booths and the number of people that we needed to have there. So
never thought about even like how much electricity. I mean, I know like a festival takes a lot, but I never thought about the high school not having the ability to carry that much
for
electricity.
All of those booths.
Yeah, all those vendors and booths. I'm very tickled by the Girl Scouts 50 years ago having a beer garden.
I had not heard that story. Right, yeah. Innovative young women.
That makes me laugh.
Well, we laughed.
Go Girl Scouts.
Some of the things, when we were at high school, if I think by today's standards, if any kind of inspector had come through and to see how we rigged up the electricity, I just think they would have shut us down immediately. Yeah. And the other thing, we laughed one year. I was involved for a number of years chairing, co-chairing with Skip Halke. And we would go on, and Skip would always kind of make it, we were presenting out to organizations, he'd say, well, we'd really keep it authentic. I said, well, yes, last year we were very authentic. I said, Matthews, I'm not Scandinavian. I was helping you chair. We had a beer garden run by the OVO Bryant, and we had a dinner put on by Mr. Rubio. So I said, that's pretty well keeping it authentic. And I think the dinner was being served by girls from Tongue Point.
That's great.
That's funny.
You know, Mark and I emceed the coronation there for close to 9 years, possibly even 10, I'm not even sure, but a long time.
So you did a great job on it, too, let me tell you.
Definitely saw, you know, quite a few, your granddaughters come through the courts. But oral history is very much a part of the festival, because you kick off that weekend by all of those young women having to learn and then share their own family story. Why is that still important? Because that is something that hasn't changed over the years, that same format of having those young women learn those stories, talk to the people that are around them, and then share them.
I think the importance of that is that when the girls get in there, a lot of them, they know that they have a background in one country, or sometimes several of the countries, but whichever one they're representing. They know they have a background, but they don't really know how. And so I think it was always interesting to them to start finding out from family members how their family got here, where they were, why they were here. And so they find out a lot, and I think they're always very interested that they find this out.
And they go all around town. They tell different stories. So they tell a story when they visit all those social service organizations, and then they tell another story that night at the coronation.
True, yes. Because when they go around to the organizations, they're trying to tell why, you know, what's going to go on at the festival. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, that night their speech is what my heritage means to me. So that's when they have to really dig back into their history and find out why.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think that's great, because too often, you know, you don't, if you're 15 or 16 or 17, you don't really care. And then by the time you do, grandma's gone.
Right.
And those stories, they're a non-renewable resource,
yes.
Those oral histories. So I think it is fantastic that they do that. Hey, switching gears a little bit, you had a huge career, long career, at the school district. Talk a little bit about what that entailed and some of your highlights.
Well, so I went to work at the, kind of interesting to show you how time passes. I went to work for the school district right when they passed the bond issue for what was then going to be a junior high school, which is now the middle school.
Sure.
So here we are all these years later, tearing down a part of that original building and building a whole new building. So that's the way time goes. But that was interesting there, that we passed that bond issue. And we just as I was retiring, right after I retired, I was on the committee to help pass a bond issue to build a new school where they'd merged Lewis and Clark into us, and build a new building out there. Did a lot of work on the other schools, especially the high school at that time, and now here we have the other, and another bond issue coming now.
Were you kind of the special projects guy that got things like that done and like, okay, we've passed a bond, we need to build the school, who's going to make sure it's being built the way we want it to be? Was that kind of your...
No, I was the bean counter, as they like to call me. I had to keep track of the money. I was a business manager, and later on had the title of director of support services. So not only over the accounting in the office, but I was also to kind of be the head office person of the watching over transportation, maintenance, lunchroom. So
wow.
So that was an interesting job, and I always enjoyed it. It was always fun to go out and see what was going on in the district. One of the other things is that I would say that all except one year, very supportive. The people of this area were supportive. Have never turned down a bond issue. In fact, when they built the junior high school back in those days in 1966, they passed the bond issue and got it going. They actually ran out of money. They got a little short on money towards the end of that project. They went out with a second bond issue, and actually it was okayed also.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so they've been very supportive. And the other thing that's taken place that people don't remember, we used to have to pass a issue every year for operating funds. And, until up until, well, I can't remember what year it was now, but in the 90s, why then they turned it back over to the state. But we only had enough money to do about half of the budget. We had to pass an issue every year. We couldn't operate for the full year. And one year in the 80s, we actually were having some problems. I won't go into that, but it just was the fact we couldn't get a bond issue passed. So we started the year that year saying, we don't have a budget, but we're going to start the year. And we went, I can't remember how many times out with that bond issue. Finally, in December, now remembering that we started school in September, and in December, we said, this is it. If we don't pass it in December, then we're going to be able to have enough money to run until spring break, and then we'll be able to shut down. Wow. And that at that time, then a lot of things kind of evolved, and they passed the bond issue.
Amazing.
Another interesting thing, the school districts used to run their own elections. So it did not go through the county clerk. I had to go out and get the bond papers put together, get the ladies that were going to run the precinct, check everybody in, get them signed in, and count the ballots and all. We did our own.
Oh, my goodness.
Just a massive second. Voter fraud.
Oh, my.
Yeah, that was probably really open to that. Yeah. But never heard that anything ever come about it.
That is so interesting.
That is amazing.
They all passed.
They all passed.
Never a problem.
Never.
We didn't hear a lot of the state, though, when they were under that old thing before the state took over the all the funding. Actually, especially in Southern Oregon, was having a horrible time passing, any kind of operating levy.
Yeah.
And so they were running short years down in some parts of Southern Oregon.
It's nice that we value the education here. Let's take a little break. We're talking with Lauren. We'll be right back on An Adventure in History.
January 10th, 1884, St. Mary's Hospital, Astoria, Oregon. This institution, under care of the Sisters of Charity, is now ready for the reception of patients. Private rooms for the accommodation, if any desire them. Patients admitted at all hours, day or night. No physician has exclusive right, and every patient is free to and has the privilege of employing any physician they prefer.
And welcome back to Adventures in History. I'm Alana Quila with Providence Seaside Hospital, here today with Mac Burns, Catsup County Historical Society, and our very special guest, Lauren Matthews. Lauren, thank you for joining us.
Yeah. We might have to bring you back because I did want to talk about volunteering and how that instilled in you. But I think more importantly, because we've only got about 4 minutes left, you're involved in another huge project kind of connected to the Scandinavian Festival. But you want to talk a little bit about the Nordic Park.
Well, the Nordic Park, we got started by the fact that we were reaching our 50th anniversary, and through all the history of that, we decided we need to do something big for the 50th, and they came up with the park, that they wanted to build a park. So then we got started on that, went to the city and worked with them to find a place to put it. It probably ended up being a little bit bigger than what we thought we would start out with, and of course then we had to change from the word Scandinavian to Nordic.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. Now, what's the difference, and why was that change made?
Well, we always considered everybody, all the countries here, as Scandinavian. But it comes about, you know, really from time beginning. Finland and Iceland were not considered Scandinavian. They're really considered Nordic is the correct term to use now. So when we're building a park, we got quite a few people contacting, especially from outside, not so much inside, but outside, saying, you're going to name it, you need to name it Nordic, not Scandinavian. So okay, we made that change.
An attempt to be more inclusive for potentially people that felt
more inclusive. In fact, when the festival first started, we did not include Iceland either. And I met up through the school district, exchange student that was up in Portland. Mm-hmm. And she wondered why we weren't including Iceland. So she indeed brought us the flag and said, here, next festival, you need to fly the flag and have Iceland be part of your festival.
How could you have a festival without Iceland? No ice in the drinks? Come on.
That's right.
Although very, very few people from Iceland here, because I mean, very rarely has there been somebody representing that country. Right?
That's true. We have a hard time finding princesses. Several years we've had a junior princess, and I don't know what happens to them by the time they get to high school. They seem to go away somewhere.
Wow, that's weird.
That's great, yes.
So you're raising money for the Nordic Park. I assume you still need some funds?
We still need it. We think the park will cost us in total about $1,450,000. We have raised, right now, we're actually close to funds actually that we put through the bank at right at $900,000, and we have another $27,000 supposed to come in any day. So that'll put us over $900,000.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, that's not.
So you weren't able to put on like so many things this year that were canceled. You weren't able to put the festival on this year. Any decisions made on 2021? Are you planning on it? Because you have to get acts and performers way in advance.
Correct. And one of the problems we will have if we put one on, we will not have any performers from the Nordic countries, because it's so hard for them to get visas now. They have to work really almost a year ahead in order to be able to secure a visa. Mm-hmm. And so without knowing whether we're going to actually have a festival, there's no sense in having them lined up and trying to come here yet. So if we have some festival, we need to make that decision right after the first of the year. Mm-hmm. I'm not chairing the festival. I am president of the Historic Association, but the Scandinavian Nordic Heritage Association, but the Carla Oya and then a Tony Larson, who actually lives in Portland, are chairing the festival itself. And of course, Janet Bowler is always a big part of that too. And
well, it takes a lot of people.
So yeah. Anyway, they will need to make a decision right after the first year what we're going to do and how we're going to do it.
Big tease, big tease.
We'll stay tuned.
Yes. Thank you for joining us today for Adventures in History.
Go make some history. We'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.